So, as you can see, we are continuing with our series looking at Moses and thinking about what it means to follow God in the unknown. And this is our penultimate week. Next week, Steve Bell will be rounding off this series in Exodus 19. But today we find ourselves in Exodus 17. So if you've got a Bible on your phone or you've got an actual book there, why don't you grab it and turn to Exodus 17. And while you're doing that, one of the things I want us to be thinking about this morning is the fact that whenever we read the Bible, particularly when we're looking at the Old Testament, one of the things we need to be doing is looking for Jesus within the text. Now that seems a strange thing to do when we're looking at the Old Testament, but you know what? The whole Bible, the whole of Scripture is about Jesus. It's pointing towards Him coming, and then it's talking about His life, and then it's pointing towards Jesus coming again. And so I believe that whenever we read the Bible, we can look for Jesus in the text. In fact, Jesus Himself said this in John chapter 5. Jesus was talking to some of the religious leaders at the time, and He was saying to them, you know, you read the law, you read the Old Testament, or the bit they had at that time. And Jesus said to them, do you know what? It's all about Me. It's all about Me. When I was at Bible college a few years ago, one of the lecturers there used to say to me, Mark, do you know what? Whenever you preach, whatever you're preaching in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, whatever it is, you should be able to tell a story about Jesus within that. You should be able to point to Jesus within that. So we're going to be doing that today as we look at Exodus 17. We're going to be looking for Jesus in this story. The second thing we're going to be doing is also applying what we see, the experiences of the Israelites in this passage, to our own lives today. You see, what we read in the book of Exodus isn't just interesting history about God's people, but there are stories and accounts that we can apply to our lives that we can learn from. The Apostle Paul said exactly this in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. He was looking at the Israelites, looking at these stories in the book of Exodus, and he said this, now these things occurred as examples for us. They were written down as warnings for us. Can you see what he's saying? That these stories we read, there's things for us to learn in them. There's things for us to be warned about. Things for us to apply for our own lives. So as Claire reads to us now, and as you follow it through, start to ask a question, where's Jesus in this story? And how can I apply this story to my own life? Let's listen to Claire now.
Exodus 17, verses 1 to 7. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, travelling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarrelled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses replied, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test? But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst? Then Moses cried out to the Lord, what am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me. The Lord answered Moses, go out in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink. So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarrelled, and because they tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not?
Thanks, Claire. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to think about how we can apply this to our lives. What can we see in this story that we can look at and find that we can apply to our own situations? And the first thing I want us to think about is this, that life can feel like a wilderness experience for us too. So the Israelites are wandering in the wilderness, and we find them suffering again. The last few weeks we've seen them moaning and groaning and coming across real difficulties, whether it's lack of water or lack of food. And here, at the start of this passage, we find their suffering again. Look at what it says. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarrelled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." It's a big issue, isn't it? It's a big problem not having water in what effectively is a desert situation. They're suffering. And do you know what? For me, Christianity, following Jesus in our lives and following the faith of Christianity, is the only faith that deals with suffering adequately. When I look at other faiths, when I read about what they say about suffering, it almost seems that they ignore suffering or they kind of brush over it. You know, if you look at Buddhism, the faith of Buddhism says that suffering is just an illusion. It's just, it's not really happening. And that the closer you go in that faith, and the more you understand about that faith, the more you start to open your eyes to a different reality where there is no suffering. So if you're suffering, if you're experiencing suffering, it's just that you're not a strong enough believer. Because suffering for Buddhists is just an illusion. There's a problem with that, isn't there, though? Because that's not true. We go through times of suffering. We go through wilderness experiences in our lives. Life can feel like a wilderness experience for us too. You know, we've heard from Rosemary's testimony this morning about suddenly getting an unexpected bill. When that happens, when we're under financial pressure, it can feel like we're in a wilderness. Why haven't I got enough? Is God going to provide for me? Whether we go through health difficulties or relationship problems or other pressures that life throws at us, our own mental health, our emotional health goes up and down. Life can feel like a wilderness experience at times. And you know, the truth is, it doesn't matter how good you are or how bad you are or whether you're something in between. Suffering and pain and bad things are indiscriminate. They happen to each one of us. You know, you can be the most committed, the most faithful, the most holy follower of Jesus, and bad things can still happen. We can still find ourselves wandering in the wilderness. Jesus himself said this, didn't he? He said, you know, in this world you will have trouble. Not you might, you will have trouble. For me, our faith, the Christian faith, as followers, disciples of Jesus, this faith embraces suffering, understands what it can be like. And the reason that our faith does that is that at the heart of our faith is the truth that the best man, the only good, truly good man in history, suffered. Undeservedly. At the heart of our faith is that truth. And so we have a God and we have a faith that 100% understands wilderness experiences, understands what it is to suffer. And although God doesn't cause these things to happen, what he's able to do is to bring something amazing, to bring something beautiful out of the wilderness. He's able to turn what is bad into something good. He's able to bring life from death. Don't we see that happening in this story? On the brink of death, suddenly there's water, there is life. The worst point in human history, when man chooses to nail God to a wooden cross and there is death and silence and the end of everything, he brings life from that moment. Our faith can handle suffering but can bring hope in the middle of wilderness and suffering moments as well. But what about for us when we are in the middle of those times? When we are in these wilderness experiences, just like the Israelites were, What choices do we have in front of us? You know, I think there's two ways that we can choose to respond to these wilderness moments. The first thing we can do, and the best thing we can do, is to look for God in those moments. When that big bill comes in, when our health takes a turn for the worse, when our relationship's rocky, or when our emotional mental health is going up and down, one thing we can choose to do is say, God, I believe you're in this situation. Where are you? Show yourself in this. Bring good from what seems quite bad. That's the first thing we can do. Or the second thing we can do, and sometimes what we do, and this isn't so good, is we can start to point the finger at God. And we can start to accuse him and blame him for our suffering. God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you causing this? God, if you're that good, why don't you do something in this situation? You are bad. You are causing this to happen. And do you know what the Israelites in our passage chose? Option two. Look at what it says they did. So they, that's the Israelites, quarrelled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. So Moses replied, why do you quarrel with me? And this is the important bit. Why do you put the Lord to the test? Now, something I want to just say quickly here is that it's okay to complain to God. It's okay to pour out our heart to him and to tell him when we're in difficulties. But there is a way to complain to God that is good. Now, God can handle our honesty. God can handle the things that we're going through. It says this in Psalm 142. David writes, I pour out my complaint before him. I pour out my heart to him. The Christian author, Philip Yancey, puts it this way. He says, throw at him, at God, your grief, your anger, your doubt, your bitterness, your betrayal, your disappointment. He can absorb them all. It's okay, it's good to lament and pour out our emotions to God. But listen, that isn't what's happening here with the Israelites. They're not just pouring out their hearts to Moses and to God. You see, the word that is used here in this passage is that they quarrel. It says they quarrel with Moses. And sometimes when the Bible is translated, some of the words that are chosen aren't always the best to describe what is really happening. You see, this word that's been translated as quarrel in my Bible, and probably yours, is actually more like a legal accusation. It's more like litigation. It's more a word that would describe taking somebody to court and putting them in the dock, putting a legal charge against them. You see, what's happening here is the Israelites are putting a legal charge against Moses, and by association and extension, they're putting that charge against God as well. This isn't them just pouring their hearts out to God. This is them wanting to put him on trial. And what's the charge? What do they want to put Moses and God on charge, on trial for? It says there in verse 7, is the Lord among us or not? This is what they're pointing the finger at God about. This is what they're accusing Moses for. Is God among us or not? It's mind-blowing, isn't it? When we've come through the last few chapters of Exodus, we've seen the Israelites freed from slavery. God has freed them in a dramatic way and has destroyed their enemies. He's guided them this far. He's met their needs in miraculous and incredible ways. But still the Israelites drag Moses out. And it says they want to stone him to death, probably for treason. He says, you know, they say, is the Lord among us or not? Is God actually with us? And you think, have you not just seen what he's done? But still they feel that God has abandoned them, that he's neglected them, that God is guilty of treason against the Israelites. You see, the problem isn't that in our wilderness sometimes we complain to God. You know, God can handle that, as we've just seen. The problem is that sometimes we accuse God of wrongdoing. When we're at our lowest, when we're at our most desperate, we can accuse God of doing wrong to us. And that's what's happening here. A Christian author and leader, R.C. Sproul, puts it this way. He says this: "It is acceptable to bring all our cares to God, including matters that may move us to frustration or anger. However, we must not come to God in a spirit of anger against Him, for it is never proper to accuse God of wrongdoing." You know, be honest with God. Pour out your heart to Him when you're hurting, but never cross the line into accusing God. Never cross the line where we're putting ourselves in the position of a judge and we're putting God on trial and we've put Him in the dock. You know, there's a collection of essays and preaches by the great Christian author C.S. Lewis, and they're put together in a book called God in the Dock. And in this collection of essays and talks, C.S. Lewis explores this idea that actually humans have always had this tendency to switch places with God. And rather than seeing ourselves standing before God in judgment, one of the things that us humans can do is switch places and start to do that to Him, start to put Him on trial and start to act like we are the judge and not Him. And in this book, in this collection of stories and essays and writings, C.S. Lewis explores this passage. He looks at Exodus 17 and he says this is what's happening here. This is exactly what's happening. The Israelites have forgotten who they are. They've forgotten how almighty and powerful God is and that He is their judge. And they said, "Do you know what? We're going to switch places with You. And we're going to sit in judgment over You, God. We're going to quarrel. We're going to have legal litigation against You." And there's a couple of things that C.S. Lewis says that are fascinating about this passage and what plays out over the next few verses. And the first thing C.S. Lewis says is that it's incredible because God willingly stands accused. God actually goes along with this situation and allows Himself to be accused by the Israelites. Look at what it says in verse 6. God says this to Moses: "I will stand there before you by," and some translations say, "on the rock." And it's this phrase that God says that He's going to stand there before Moses that is most interesting. Do you know, it's the only time in the Bible that God says this to anybody, that He's going to stand before them. He's going to stand before them. And it's interesting because, and it's powerful because that phrase, "I'm going to stand before you," is used only when somebody is standing before somebody of greater authority than them. So sometimes it would be used if a slave was standing before their master and was going to be disciplined by them. Or it would be used when somebody is standing before a judge or a legal authority accused of a crime. That's the words that are being used here. So God is saying to Moses, "Look, go and stand in front of the Israelites." He says, "Take the elders, take your staff of wood, Moses, and I will stand there accused. I will stand there on trial. I will stand there in the dock." It's an incredible thing that God is saying. So rather than summoning the people of Israel before Him and standing judge over them, God is saying, "Do you know what? I will willingly offer to stand before them accused." What an incredible thing is taking place here. The second thing that plays out in this situation is that then God is punished. God is punished. Remember, he said to Moses, take your staff of wood. That's the staff of wood that he's hit the Red Sea with and seen it parted. It's the same staff that's been there that stood in judgment over the Egyptians. He says, take your staff of wood. And then he says, strike the rock and water will come out of it for the people to drink. Strike the rock with your staff of wood. Remember, this is the rock that God is standing by, and I think a better translation is that he's actually standing on. And it's this rock that is struck by Moses' staff of wood. This rock that God is on, that he's very close to, that he's standing alongside, is hit with this staff of wood. God, who is standing accused in front of the Israelites on this rock, is then hit with this staff of wood. But more than this, the Apostle Paul explains a little bit more in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Because he says this about that rock. He says, they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them. But look at this. And that rock was Christ. That rock was Christ. Can you see what's happening here? We found Jesus in Exodus 17. This whole episode is pointing forward to an event that happens many, many years later. God is taking the place of the guilty party. God is willingly standing accused. And he stands on the rock. Jesus is that rock. And the rock is struck. And as that rock is struck, Jesus is struck too. Jesus is punishment. He bears a punishment that he doesn't deserve. Incredible, incredible moment. Pointing towards an event that was going to take place outside the walls of Jerusalem many years later when Jesus stood accused of something he hadn't done. And where he allowed himself to be struck and punished in our place. And the result of what took place, living water flows from that rock. Cleansing water, clean water flows from that rock. The Israelites were about to die. They're on the brink of death. And God brings life from death in the wilderness. It's the gospel right here in Exodus chapter 17. Incredible, incredible. Many years after this event, Jesus stood in front of a group of people. And he said, anyone who comes to me will never go thirsty. Anyone who comes to me will never go thirsty. You know, the gospel, the good news of Jesus has always been. It's been from the beginning of time, there's been good news about Jesus. And it's still true today. You know, life is a wilderness experience. Life has moments that can be really hard where it goes up and down. And within those moments, just as the Israelites did, we can blow it. We can even start to accuse God. We even confuse God's role and our role. We get it round the wrong way and we can start to accuse and point the finger at God. We can blow it. But the good news is that God has done something about that. Jesus stands in our place, accused of the things that we do wrong. Jesus allows himself to be struck and punished for the things that we have done wrong. And there is forgiveness. And that forgiveness is this life-giving, cleansing water that then flows from him. Jesus says, anyone who comes to me will never go thirsty. We're going to take some time now to respond, and we're going to use a worship song to help us to do that. But maybe that you need some of that life-giving water in your life today. Maybe you've never known that. Maybe you've never come to Jesus and known that. Maybe it's that you're just feeling a bit dry at the moment. You haven't come to him for a long time. But my encouragement to you now, as we sing this song, is to say to Jesus, I'm coming to you. Look at what he says. Anyone who comes to me. It means we've got to move. We've got to get up and we've got to move towards him. So as we sing this song, if you need to come to Jesus this morning, why don't you open yourself to that? And say, Jesus, feels like a wilderness at the moment. And I need a drink from you in my wilderness.